In the crowded Democratic primary for Wisconsin governor, David Crowley is trying to stick out for his executive experience running Waukee County. Waukee has a lot of Democratic Party voters, Phil, and he won re-election in 2024 with 85% of the vote.
But only 16% of people in the Madison market recognize his name, according to a Marquette Law School poll. And we have a lot of left-leaning voters here, too, the progressive kind.
Crowley helped get a deal done with Republican lawmakers for more state revenue for Milwaukee. He also got a local sales tax, something our leaders in Madison and Dane County didn't accomplish.
But how will his ability to find consensus play with primary voters itching for a fight?
We're going to talk to Crowley about his bid for governor and what sets him apart among the crowded Democratic field on today's Center Stage with Milford and Hands, the Wisconsin State Journal's political podcast from the Sensible Center of Wisconsin Politics. I'm Scott Milford. I'm the opinion editor at the State Journal.
I'm Phil Hands. I'm the editorial cartoonist at the Wisconsin State Journal.
And we are two-fifths of the Wisconsin State Journal editorial board.
The more consensus-building two-fifths.
Well, David Crowley, welcome to Center Stage with Milford and Hands. You're running for governor, and we also just learned it's your birthday. Happy birthday.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
40 years
Anything
old.
Anything you want in particular for your birthday this year, David?
You know, I would love to become governor. That would be a great birthday present from all the residents of Wisconsin. That would be great.
Are you doing anything fun today besides participating on our podcast?
Well, you know, this is going to be fun, but I have an event later on tonight, but really looking forward to just hanging out with my wife and my three daughters, as well as my father and stepmother. So it's going to be a great time for just to hang out, chill a little bit tonight, but, you know, feeling good.
Here in Madison, you're not as well known. Mm-hmm. And what we do know about you, I think a lot of people know about you, is that you've worked sometimes across the aisle. You've often made news because, for example, unlike the local leaders in Madison, Dane County, you got a sales tax, local sales tax from the Republican legislature. Phil and I are both big Brewer fans. I saw you at the big to-do about American Family Field. So are you the consensus candidate in the sense of you could find consensus at the state capitol?
You know, I'm not going to go that far and say we'll be able to find consensus, right? Because I think that, you know, right now we know there's a new crop of new faces that are going to be coming into the legislature on both sides of the aisle. But it's really about bringing and building a table large enough to where people feel that they have a voice, right? I think that right now people are frustrated with politics, right? We're seeing what is happening at the national level. There are so many decisions happening in Washington, D.C., but it's affecting us locally here in the state of Wisconsin and local municipalities. And there's a lot of frustration, right? Not just with Republicans and who's occupying the White House, but frustrations with our own Democratic Party, right? It's great that we have been fighting back, and we have to continue to do that. But what's important is, how do we communicate the real message? What is the vision in the agenda that we're really putting on the table to make sure that when the tide rises, all the boats rise here in the state of Wisconsin? And so what I see right now as I travel across the state is that people just want government to work again, right? And it's not to say that we're, you know, not going to disagree, right? We disagree with our loved ones, we disagree with our spouses, but it doesn't stop us from being able to do the work on behalf of those that we represent. And as the next governor of Wisconsin, it's about making sure that no more families will be left behind and we can actually focus on our state model and move forward.
How does that play in this Democratic primary? It seems that there's some candidates that really want to fight the other side, and you strike me as, well, you're not going to back down to anybody. You're going to look for places of agreement, too. I mean, is that accurate? Am I viewing this correctly?
We have to find places of agreement, right? I think that right now in our politics, Democrats only win when Republicans lose, and Republicans only win when Democrats lose. But at the end of the day, it's the people who lose, right? It's our public schools who are losing. It's healthcare access that we lose access to. And so we have to bring more people to the table. I was told, you know, as an organizer, right, if you're not at the table, you are on the menu. And many people in this state, across the entire country, feels that their voice isn't being heard. And let's just face it, right? Not too long ago, we had, you know, President Trump basically said that he's not thinking about Americans' finances right now, or we go to war with Iran. And if you're not thinking about the people that you represent as you begin, as you, you know, continue to make decisions, that should let you know that he is not looking to looking out for us, right? He is focused on his own selfishness of, as far as what his legacy is going to be and how he's going to continue to build these new things. Yet mm-hmm. he is not building up Wisconsin families or American families. And so we have to find a consensus because we need government to work, especially when we have so much uncertainty in our country and across the world right now.
So, Mr. Crowley, I just have to ask, you've mentioned Trump a couple of times so far already in this interview. How much of this race is going to be about the orange man in the White House or versus the other primary candidates going forward?
Well, I think that we have to make sure that we're showing a contrast, right? And so we have to talk about what is happening in Washington, D.C., because we have to make sure that we can combat all the issues that we're facing, the gaps from this big, ugly bill that he actually, you know, pushed through and Republicans voted for. Now it's up to the state of Wisconsin. Now it's up to local municipalities to figure out how we move forward. But I think it's extremely important that while we show that contrast, we can't continue to just react to Donald Trump. He is defining our party for us. And as long as we continue to react, it's going to be very difficult for us to focus on the proactive measures and the policies that's going to benefit every single community and every single person in our state. And so I think that you have to have a healthy balance of showing what is happening within Washington, D.C., within the White House, and how we will be able to govern moving forward right here within the state of Wisconsin.
What distinguishes you, David, among this fairly crowded Democratic field? A lot of you agree on a lot of issues. So what really sticks out for the Crowley campaign for voters?
Well, one, I have the experience. Not only have I spent 7 years in the state capitol, in the state senate, as well as the state assembly, I have been leading the largest county in the state of Wisconsin. Not just the most diverse, but also one of the most challenging. I represent 19 different municipalities that all have their own unique personalities and needs as well. And so we're doing the work because as government, as county government, by the state constitution, we are extensions of the state of Wisconsin. So a lot of the programs and services that the state actually, you know, invest in, I'm responsible for actually delivering. But what also was different for me is that, you know, I have a proven track record of getting things done, you know, here locally within all 19 municipalities, but also across the entire state of Wisconsin. And that's what we should be focusing on. You know, campaigning is easy. Being able to make promises, anybody could do that while they're running for office. Governing is hard, especially under this Trump administration, right? And I came into office in May of 2020, onset of the pandemic, and dealt with not just crises, but when we were facing the largest deficit, we were able to get back on track. And what we don't know is what's going to happen in our future here in this country, right? The question that we're having is whether or not we're going to go into a recession. And when I think about the experience that I have had, you know, being able to work with deficits, figure out how to invest in critical services when the math, quite frankly, isn't working, I have that experience and no other candidate does.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever get money for all of that flooding that occurred in Milwaukee?
You know, I'm glad that FEMA was here. You know, I kind of had to scoff at it because, you know, they were able to assist many of our residents as well as our small businesses, and they needed to. And there were mm-hmm. so many people who were just devastated and lost not just memories, but lost their homes. But when it comes down to the public infrastructure, the federal government turned their back on us. And it didn't just affect Milwaukee County. Right. It affected 6 counties in total here in the state of Wisconsin. You think about Waukesha, Ozaukee, Washington, Brown County, Outagamie. None of us were able to receive the public assistance dollars that our community relies on. This is about fixing up the roads, the bridges, the public spaces that people utilize every single day. Yet we have to bear the brunt of these costs. Right. And so as local units of government, as a state of Wisconsin, we shouldn't have to focus on, you know, how to fill these gaps, how to pay for this level of infrastructure, when that's where the federal government should be stepping in. That's what FEMA was actually created for. And so we have to stop playing politics and really focus on building up America, building up the state of Wisconsin. And that's why, you know, I'm going to always continue to fight back. But fighting back doesn't mean that you can't come to the table and actually get things done. And I think that because of the work that we had done ahead of time with FEMA, that's the reason why our residents, our small businesses, as well as our big businesses, they were able to get the assistance that we needed. But it's unfortunate that when it comes down to public infrastructure, the federal government decided you weren't important.
On that special session bill that did not pass, what was your take on that? It seemed like you were not fiery against it, but you saw some good in it, but you weren't as outspoken about it. What's your take on that? It was going to try to get at the property tax burden and steer some extra money to schools, and also send some checks to people before an election.
We all like checks.
But there was a concern about what it might do to the state's finances, which have been strong under the Evers regime. So what was your take on that?
Well, one, let's remember, this is the result of divided government. We have a Democratic governor who has been doing great work for the past 8 years. And then, you know, the Republican-controlled legislature, they have been a barrier. They have created many different challenges for this governor to be able to put forth great policies that's going to help everybody in the state of Wisconsin. But it is unfortunate that we continue to utilize this surplus as a political football versus actually doing what's right for communities all across this state. You know, I was glad to see some level of investments coming into our education system, which I think is important. But there's also a lot of gimmicks in this, right? And I know that it was, you know, a lot of the negotiating with the Republican-controlled legislature to send out checks to different folks all across the state. But, you know, some of our most vulnerable residents, they weren't going to get those checks, right? They weren't going to get the relief that they needed. And so what I would tell folks is that if you really want to see a change, you have to show up. You have to show up this upcoming August and in November, making sure that we are working extremely hard to get that Democratic trifecta that we need, taking over the state Senate, taking over the state assembly, so we don't have these types of conversations and boondoggles when it comes down to actually giving resources back to local communities. But this is also an opportunity, right, for us to come to the table, Democrats, Republicans, and talk about a long-term strategy, because we can't continue to put Band-Aids over a broken leg. You know, our shared revenue system is 100 plus years old. You know, no business, no person can be able to sustain themselves doing the exact same thing for 100 plus years and not pivot and continue to sustain themselves. And so we have to take a hard look at what we need to do long term to really fix our finances moving forward. Otherwise, we're going to continue to see ourselves in this cycle of fighting with one another to figure out how to spend dollars.
So you would have voted no?
I'm not in the legislature, but, you know, but at the end of the day, this is about what we need to do, right? And so we have to focus on, you know, delivering for the people. And I think what this really showed is that we need more collaboration. We need more partnerships. We need more voices at the table when we're talking about this particular surplus.
Yeah, it's kind of too bad that you needed to get some sort of big deal done. You need to have all leadership leaving office at the same time.
Well, I do think that, you know, when you're having not just the governor, but, Robin Voss, as well as Devin Lemonhue in their prospective roles, leaving the legislature, having them lead this and not really having conversations with the state legislature absolutely leaves a sour taste in people's mouths. It was a bipartisan effort to get it through, and it was a bipartisan effort to stop this, which lets you know that we have to bring more people to the table and have deeper conversations.
So you've been county executive for what, 5, 6 years now?
Six years.
What would you say your biggest accomplishment is in that period of time for our statewide audience that doesn't necessarily know everything about Milwaukee County?
You know, we have a lot of different wins, right? And it's hard when people say, like, what's the one thing, you know, because it's so much that we have done. But, you know, if I had to combine everything, it's challenging the status quo. We can't continue to do things the exact same way that we have been doing them, right? And if we continue to have the status quo, they can be destroyed by folks who quite frankly don't care for government. But we also have to make sure that whatever we're building can withstand it with resilience, right? To make sure that they aren't being attacked and they are not crumbling under, for example, the Trump administration. And so we have been able to build affordable housing. You know, and what's unique is that, It's happening in suburban communities. Six different municipalities who've never seen these types of projects happen before, they've come to the table. And because of the work that we have done in Housing First, Milwaukee County has the lowest unsheltered homeless count per capita in any community in the entire United States. And that's because we put our money where our mouth is. But it's also about how we've actually changed the perception of leadership here within Milwaukee County and how we are working alongside one another to tackle many of the big issues. We've reduced our carbon emissions by 50%. We've reduced overdose deaths by 50% in the past 4 years. We've ended every single year, you know, with the surplus that I have been county executive. And while we still have challenges, we know that we have to create a greater partnership with the state of Wisconsin to move forward, because where Milwaukee County is where every city, every town, every village, every county in the state of Wisconsin, they're all feeling the pinch because the state of Wisconsin has not been sending enough resources for us to continue to deliver for our residents and investing in public service, public health, you know, public infrastructure that people believe in. And so there's a lot that we have done, and I'm really proud of this work. And I want to take these skills, take this same experience to the state of Wisconsin and deliver for the 6 million people who call this place home.
So delivering for the people, what's one big thing you'd like to deliver for the people of Wisconsin? If you had a magic wand and no Republican legislature when you get there, what's one thing you'd like to get done tomorrow as governor?
Oh, I mean, that's an unfair question because there's a lot that we have to get done here in the state of Wisconsin, you know. But the first and foremost, I mean, you know, I'm a public school graduate. All three of my daughters, right, go to Milwaukee Public Schools. And my oldest is getting ready to graduate at the end of this school year. So making sure that our public schools are in the best position possible is absolutely critical. You know, our children are not just the leaders of the future, they're the leaders of today. And if we want to make sure that they're ready, we have to invest in education. But that also includes early childhood education, right? Making sure that people can have access to childcare centers so their children can have a better foundation of learning before they enter the public school system. You know, but housing is also important, right? I don't think that it's hard for families to focus on education, their own healthcare, how they're going to make more money when they don't know if they're going to have a roof over their head, you know. But in order to buy a house, you have to be able to afford it. And we still have a minimum wage that is $7.25 an hour. And we need to raise that to $20 an hour and give people the ability to collectively bargain. And so I know you asked for one, but there's so much that we have to do simultaneously to make sure that all families in the state of Wisconsin has a much better foundation and that they can believe that they can get ahead because we're making the investment in them.
You're in Milwaukee County. What's your view of public charter schools and private voucher schools? Are those part of the solution overall for our state, or are they a problem?
Look,
and I know they're very
could,
different things.
Oh, yeah. If we could get rid of them tomorrow, I think everybody would say, well, let's do that. But we're not in that position, right? Let's face it. We've had so many public schools, if not every public school district, has had to go to referendum in order to make sure that they're getting enough resources to take care of the current population that they have. And if we ended the charter and the private voucher system, especially in places like Milwaukee County, we'll be sending 50,000 kids right back into the public school system. And that will put a strain on our public schools because they're not getting enough resources right now. They don't have the capacity to bring on 50,000 kids. And so before we can have conversations about getting rid of the private voucher system, we first have to actually strengthen the public school systems in making sure that they are solvent, they have enough resources, and they can continue to deliver like they have in the past. But without fully funding our public schools, you know, making sure that they're getting the two-thirds funding formula, fully funding the special education gap that we have seen, is going to be very difficult to get rid of any of these private voucher schools because we haven't strengthened our public school system.
How about those, some of the charter schools? Like we have a specialty school called Nuestro Mundo in Madison. It's within the district. A lot of young people learn to speak Spanish. A lot of people who only speak Spanish have their culture celebrated and have a easier transition to graduation. We have a Kaleem Cares School, which is a charter school chartered by UW, which is trying to make a dent on some of the achievement gaps that have really just exasperated a lot of people in the Madison area for a long time. So what about schools like those?
I'm glad you brought that up, because a lot of people don't know the difference, right? When they hear charter schools, they're assuming that sometimes these are religious schools or the private charter system, mm-hmm. but a lot of them are actually attached to our public school systems, right? And they're part of the system. They're listening and working with the school district. And I think that's important. And I think that we can absolutely work with those schools moving forward, because they are a part of the system. They're working with teacher unions. They're working with school boards. They're working with children, you know, to make sure that they're getting the education that they need. But anytime that we have best practices within our education system, we shouldn't just be sharing that within the school districts themselves. We should be sharing that with the school districts across the entire state, because we want all of our kids to get ahead.
How do you win this thing in terms of a lot of people not knowing who you are? I mean, you're going on the podcast. I know you're traveling the state. Where are you today, by the way?
I am in Milwaukee today.
Okay.
You know, I woke up this morning, actually. We do a Healthy County Challenge, so I was doing yoga in the domes yesterday. And then this morning, I woke up. We always do a day of service in partnership with Habitat for Humanity. So I actually helped build a home this morning. So I'm here in Milwaukee. But as we travel across the state, you know, let's not forget that the person that's leading in the polls right now are undecided voters. Voters have not made a decision on who they want to support. And so, unfortunately, it takes dollars, it takes resources to get your name out there. And so we're going to continue to focus on fundraising efforts as well as traveling across the state. And I will tell you that, you know, it gets tiring, right? You know, I'm working three different jobs. I am a husband and father. I still have a day job being a county executive, and I'm out on the road making sure that we're talking to folks as I run for governor. And when I'm in these rural areas, I get even more energized, right? Because it's an opportunity not just to introduce myself, but talk about my work. And let's face it, right? Because Milwaukee, we can be a lightning rod for Democrats and Republicans. And so they don't get a chance to hear all the great things. And once I share them, they're kind of blown away, because they see the work that we have been doing. And quite frankly, they're upset that they haven't been hearing about the work we've done here in Milwaukee County. And so we're going to continue to crisscross around the state. But it's about, you know, not just finding donors and people to help you, you know, raise money to get up on TV and social media. It's about recruiting volunteers, making sure that they're making phone calls, writing postcards, knocking on doors. And we're building a grassroots campaign, a people campaign, to make sure that, you know, we become a household name prior to this August primary. And so I look forward to the work that we're doing, but it's our job to tell our story. And really focus on how we can deliver for Wisconsin families.
What's your take on Francesca Hong leading that first Marquette poll, albeit 15-ish%? You were down at 3% among Democrats. As you say, it was like 65% had decided. So I take your point there. But what do you make about with the representative on the Madison Isthmus leading that first poll?
Look, I think that, you know, a lot of people are paying attention to this election, aren't paying attention to this election. And yet there are folks who have their base and are able to actually get the folks who are doing these polls and get their voters out. But again, 66% of the voters out there are undecided. And so we can't base anything based off of these polls, because it's showing us that people have not been paying attention. And quite frankly, it's because they're being distracted. They're being divided by what is happening in Washington, D.C., and it's soaking up so much oxygen out of the room. It is hard to focus on, you know, putting more food on the table, getting people access to housing while they're going to the pump and seeing their gas prices rise, right? They're opening up their mail and seeing their utilities prices rise. And they're thinking about all the decisions that are being made in Washington, D.C., and how that is affecting their local communities. So, you know, a lot of people have not been paying attention to this governor's mm-hmm. race, which lets us know that we have all the candidates in this race, we still have a long road ahead of us. And so none of us can take for granted what we're seeing in these polls. But we also know that too many people aren't paying attention, and we have to figure out how to engage them. And there's a lot of lost voices, particularly within the Democratic Party, right? When you think about young people and independents who have just veered away from our party. And we're seeing a lot more independents because of what Trump has done to this Republican Party. And our job, my job running for governor is not get people to become Democrats per se. I just need them to vote for them. And as long as we're talking to the values that people care about, you know, we're going to get people on our side, and that's what we're going to be focused on.
You obviously need to win Milwaukee and win fairly well if you want to win this nomination. There's another guy named Mantell Barnes from Milwaukee who's also running and was in the legislature, and more people know who he is. According to the poll, he's the presumptive leader. How do you, of this primary leading candidate, how do you differentiate yourself from Mandela?
Well, I think my experience just sets me apart from all the different candidates, right? 7 years in the state capitol, and not just as an elected representative, I was a staffer. And when you think about how the sausage is made, it's the staff that actually makes the sausage a lot of the times. And so, you know, I have a lot of great experience in understanding how Madison works, but I have my own geographical base, right? For the past 6 years, I've been, you know, leading close to a million people here. And, you know, I'm really excited as far as what we have done and how we're going to be able to speak to local communities here within Milwaukee County. So I have no doubt in my mind that, you know, my base here is going to come out for me. Our job is to make sure that we're taking this message on the road, you know, not just here in southeastern Wisconsin, but in central Wisconsin, northeast, northwest, southwest, and making sure people understand that what we're going to do to make sure that they can get ahead. And so I'm excited about this. I think I'm the only candidate actually with this large enough geographical base that I'll be able to tap into. And so, but you can't take anything for granted, as I said before. It's about making sure that you continue to hit the ground, you pound that pavement, and talk to as many voters as possible.
That same poll said that 91% of likely Democratic voters identified inflation and the cost of living as a top issue. So if that's what Democratic voters is top of mind for Democratic voters, how do you satisfy that very large concern?
Well, this is about bringing more people to the table. Right. And we have to make sure that when we bring people to the table, we're actually listening to the solutions that they feel we need to do moving forward. You know, no one wants to continue to see property taxes, their utility bills, groceries rise every single day. Right. And I know how to tackle these things. You know, as county executive, we delivered the largest property tax cut in Milwaukee County history. Right. Because we knew that families were feeling the squeeze, you know, and we want to continue to deliver these services. And we made sure to continue. We are continuing doing that. But we have to figure out how we lower costs. And a lot of that can be done through our property taxes. But we have to become, you know, more innovative, right? And so one of the things that I have been talking about on the campaign trail and what I'm proposing is that we have to start from scratch, especially when it comes down to shared revenue, as well as our school funding formula, right? Let's put a commission together. Let's bring labor. Let's bring business leaders. Let's bring local units of government, state elected officials as well. And let's have an open and honest conversation about how we spend as well as how we collect revenues here in the state of Wisconsin. Let's look at what other states are doing. How can we adopt that here so we can create a more sustainable funding mechanism moving forward so we don't continue to be in this cycle of pointing fingers on why we aren't able to deliver the programs and services people rely on. And so this is, we really have to think outside the box, and we really have to focus on long-term solutions, because as long as we keep thinking in two-year increments, it's going to be hard for us to dig ourselves out of this hole.
So you mentioned property taxes. I don't know if you'd seen this in Milwaukee County, but here in Madison in Dane County, the average price of a home is now over $500,000 for your average home in Madison. What do we do about the cost of housing in the state of Wisconsin? Do we need to build more housing? Do we need to figure out how to subsidize mortgages? What's the solution to make housing more affordable in the state?
I think everything has to be on the table. You know, you compare Milwaukee County, for example, the largest county in the state of Wisconsin. It is cheaper to rent a home in Austin, Texas right now than it is in southeastern Wisconsin and in Milwaukee. And we have to change that. And a lot of this is because we have a supply issue, right? During the COVID-19 pandemic, there were many communities across this country that continued to build, yet we put a pause. And when you see a lot of the work and a lot of the housing that has been coming online, it's all housing that even as county executive, I can't afford, right? And so we have to really focus on not just building affordable units, affordable home ownership opportunities, as well as building attainable housing as well, right? I think about, you know, we have an aging population here in the state of Wisconsin. There are many elders, there are many older adults who are looking to downsize, yet there isn't a space for them. And if we can create more senior housing in communities all across this state, that will open up more home ownership opportunities for young families. But the affordability piece is about, you know, when I think about my daughter, right, or you have children who are coming home after graduating college, they can't move back to their communities because there isn't a housing stock available. There isn't any apartments available. And so we absolutely need to build more. But we also need to make sure that we're providing more resources. And so providing more opportunities for people to get a first-time home buyer's loan to buy their first home is going to be key. And it's about how do we incentivize local municipalities when it comes down to zoning to create more accessible dwelling units to allow for more density, but also thinking long-term about how, you know, creating that density is going to help the tax base in many of these local communities to help them lower their property taxes, even it out across their community so they can afford to stay where they are. But it's also going to create more economic activity, right? And we can also do this for workforce housing. When you think about many of the employment opportunities that are struggling to find workers because people don't want to travel 1 to 2 to 3 hours in order to go to and from work. So there's a lot of work that we have to do around housing. It's extremely personal for me, because I know what housing instability can do to families as well as young kids.
How do you plan to vote on the constitutional amendment in November that would limit the governor's veto power, prevent vetoes from increasing spending, and require that vetoes only be used to lower spending? How do you plan to vote on that?
Personally, I plan to vote no on that, to be honest with you. And if you, I mean, let's look at the history of all the referendums that we have seen coming from this Republican-controlled legislature. It's always been because they were upset that they didn't necessarily get their way. They're not necessarily looking to come and play ball. They're looking to take their ball and go home. And we have seen this numerous of times, not just with what we're going to see in this upcoming November with the veto, but how they also tried to eliminate a constitutional office in the treasurer's seat, right? And so they're constantly trying to go to referendum and constantly trying to do constitutional amendments because they see the writing on the wall. They see that Democrats are rising up. People are fed up with the Republican Party. And so they always want to rig the system. And we have to pay attention to that. And we have to pay attention to that when we're going to the ballot box, making sure that we are electing people with integrity who is willing to accept defeat, whether it's with their election, unfortunately, it's something Donald Trump doesn't know how to do, or whether when it comes down to a policy that they can't necessarily get through, that is extremely partisan. And so I plan on voting no on this because we have to make sure that we're giving people the opportunity to let their voices be heard. But again, we can't continue to make decisions on behalf of the people just because we don't like the fact that things aren't going our way.
Governor Evers, in theory, increased school spending for 400 years. Aren't you worried at all, though, that with that sort of immense power that a Governor Tiffany, for example, could increase spending on vouchers for 400 years?
But we also know that our budget is a 2-year living document. And so, you know, all the things that we're seeing can be changed, right? And who's to say that a Democratic legislature and a Democratic governor won't change what Governor Evers did? But at the end of the day, you know, the reason why that veto came to play is that we aren't giving enough money to our public schools, right? They didn't fill the special education gap like they promised. They said about 42% were going to go towards to special education. It was much lower than that. And then none of the public schools seen an increase in general aid, right? And so Governor Evers was doing everything in his power to make sure that we're sending resources back to our public schools. But we need a real fix. It was a temporary fix to make sure that schools every single year would get that particular increase. We need a long-term fix. We can't continue to utilize our budget document on how we're going to plan our investments for decades to come. And that's the real problem.
So Scott mentioned Tom Tiffany, who is likely going to be the Republican nominee for governor. Why are you the best Democrat to beat Tom Tiffany in November?
Well, look, the Republicans fear me the most because if I get over the hump in August, they know I'm the most competitive candidate to defeat Tom Tiffany in November, right? When I ran for re-election in 2024, I won with 85% of the vote, right? And as you can imagine, that wasn't just the city of Milwaukee. That was me winning all 19 municipalities here within Milwaukee County. And it wasn't just Democrats. It was Republicans and independents. And those Republicans, those independents, and those former MAGA folks who voted for Trump and who are exhausted by MAGA, you know, I know they will vote for me because they voted for me twice before. And that's why they fear me in this election. You know, because I know what families are going through, whether you live in rural, suburban, and urban communities. You know, I know what it's like to have to, you know, coming home and not knowing if food is going to be on the table, right? Or if your lights are going to be on, or your belongings are going to be on the curb from another eviction because of your parents or your mother's addiction. And so they know that what I bring to the table is going to bring more people into the fold, because this is about how we're going to get things done and deliver for folks. And so, you know, I'm really excited about getting over the hump in August, because I truly believe that if we are facing Tom Tiffany, we will win not only in November, but we're going to make sure that the policies that we push over the next couple of years is going to benefit every single person in the state of Wisconsin.
Where are you going to be at in fundraising when those initial reports come out? Are you going to be near the top or more in the middle? How are you doing on fundraising?
I think fundraising has been going well. You know, we were the top fundraiser coming into this year from this last report. And so we will see what the fundraising reports look like in July. But as you can imagine, those reports won't mean much because we'll just be a few weeks removed from the primary election. But we're going to continue the momentum. And I truly believe that, you know, our fundraising is a direct reflection of the trust that we have built here in the state. Right. We have, you know, we've got a lot of things done, and we've gotten it done by creating, you know, partnerships and collaborating with communities all across the state of Wisconsin. And so I'm not sure exactly where anyone is going to be. I think everybody's getting those phone calls about getting involved because of how critical of these midterms are going to be. But it is my hope that we will actually see some level of campaign finance reform, not just here in the state of Wisconsin, but across this country, because too many candidates have to focus on raising money versus actually talking to voters. But we also have to play this game to make sure that we can actually compete with this rigged system that Republicans created many years ago. And so we're going to continue to fundraise as much as possible to make sure that we can get our message across.
Who's your biggest competition in this race in the primary? Who's the candidate you fear the most?
I'll be honest with you, Hans. Like my biggest competition right now, and who concerns me the most, are the undecided voter. Right, they are leading in the polls, and we need to make sure that we're reaching them and delivering a message that actually resonates with them. Right, it's not about the promises and saying all the things that we're going to deliver, and no one has a track record of getting these things done outside of me being in this campaign. And so, you know, I need to talk to as many undecided voters as possible and getting them to understand what we bring to this campaign in order to earn their support.
Shortly after you announced, there was some county employees, their health insurance expired. How did that happen, and what are you telling people about that?
Well, I want to be very clear. Health insurance did not expire, right? Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people don't know that Milwaukee County, we are self-insured. Right. And so we actually pay out all of our claims. The contract that had expired or lapsed, at it, if you will, it lapsed, one, because United Healthcare had the contract. And two, they only file our claims because we can't do that claim work in-house within Milwaukee County. No one lost health insurance. And once we found out what had happened, we acted swiftly. And I think that what we showed was is what executive leadership really looks like. You know, when you're leading a large organization, whether it's a nonprofit, a for-profit, or government, things happen with many of your employees. And we all know that. But what's important is how we respond to it. And we responded accordingly, and we made sure to get that contract signed, and we were able to move forward. But no one lost health insurance. We are self-insured. The contract dealt with how we file claims through United Healthcare.
Who did you work for at State Capitol?
So when I was in the State Capitol, I worked for Senator Nakia Dodd. She mm-hmm. was elected in 2012. She served from 2013 through 2016. I worked for her for 4 years as her outreach and policy director. And prior to that, she was a Morgan County Board Supervisor. And I got my start working in government under her tutelage and worked for a year and a half as her legislative aide for the Morgan County Board. I like to think that the work that we have done helped propel her to actually go to the state.
Were you like 18 at the time?
I was about, I think at the time I was 25. I was 25 okay. years old. So I got started, you know, I got started early. And that's because I had a youth development organization that literally saved my life. It introduced me to community organizing, and it introduced me to AmeriCorps. And when I went through the AmeriCorps program as a public ally, it helped to really solidify my foundation of service. And I always wanted to give back to the community because this is the same community that saved my life. And this is one of the reasons why, you know, I'm in public service today, because I'm in this for the right reasons. It's not about, you know, moving up and trying to fulfill, you know, accolades or fulfill an ego. This is about delivering for people. And, you know, I look at myself as a servant leader wanting to deliver for all of Wisconsin.
Are you traveling the state every week? Where are you going this week, for example? Or are you more just concentrating on getting the vote out in Milwaukee County?
No, I am everywhere every single week. You know, I was in Sheboygan earlier this week. I don't know where I'm going to be this weekend. I try not to look too far ahead because, as you can imagine, you know, juggling, you know, both the county executive's work as well as the governor's race, it can be a little bit overwhelming for some, but we've been able to manage. And I feel really good as far as where we are. But no, I am always outside of Milwaukee County every single week, making sure that we're talking to as many voters as possible, because I'm not looking to be the governor of Milwaukee. I'm not looking to be the governor of Southeastern Wisconsin. I'm looking to be the governor for all of us. And it's going to take all of us coming to the table and getting engaged for that to happen.
What's some place out across the state that really sticks out, that almost like a travel tip here? What place just really excited you and we need to know about it? All Wisconsin needs to know about it, because it was sort of a hidden gem.
You know, you're going to get me in trouble trying to talk about where's the best place to travel in the state of Wisconsin. But I will tell you that it doesn't matter where you go, right? We have a beautiful, beautiful state. And I tell folks all the time, no matter where I'm going, I'm taking the scenic route, because if you've never traveled across Wisconsin, if you've never taken many of these back roads, you've never really seen the true beauty that we have. When you think about the spaces, you think about the manufacturing, you think about the rich agricultural history that we have in the state of Wisconsin. And so every single place I've been is my favorite. But I take the scenic route wherever I go. I'm never going to single out a single community other than my own, because I currently represent that community.
So what's your vacationing in Milwaukee County then?
Well, you know, summertime in Milwaukee County is absolutely beautiful. When you think about what we have to offer, you know, a lot of people don't know, you know, within Milwaukee County, we have over 150 parks, right? We have 13 municipal owned golf courses, and we have hundreds of miles of trail space for people to enjoy. And you think about the food scene, you think about the entertainment and the different ethnic festivals that we have on Summerfest grounds, including our largest music festival in the country, in the world, I would argue. There's so much for us to do. But I also understand that, you know, we don't do this work on our own. You know, there are a lot of people who always say, oh, we're the economic engine of the state. And I hate when people say that, because it feels like we're beating our chests. We contribute to our economic activity statewide, but we do this in partnership with our rural and our suburban communities as well. And so we are not Milwaukee County without all the other 71 counties here in Wisconsin.
Phil and I were at the Brewer game a few weeks ago, and they had a supper club theme with their Wisco uniforms. I'm just wondering, do you have a favorite supper club somewhere in Wisconsin?
So you're trying to get me in trouble again. But Yeah, I've been to many supper clubs. One of my favorites, though, was one of my favorites that I now throw this out there because it doesn't even exist anymore, was actually going to Al Swearengen's supper club when I had a chance to go there, go to Rhinelander. It's nice to see the whole dag, but it was nice to be there because it was so memorable because of the conversations that I was able to have. Right. And I remember talking to a couple while I was out there. You know, the wife didn't have anything, didn't want to have anything to do with me. So I started to engage with the husband, and he was a business owner. He owned some trucks, and we sparked up a conversation. And in the very beginning, it seemed as if he was just railing on Milwaukee, trying to talk about, you know, how bad Milwaukee was. But as we began to progress in the dialogue, I realized that he was just making a comparison to Rhinelander and how he is having trouble finding workers. And the issues that are affecting Rhinelander are the exact same issues within Milwaukee County. And so he asked me to step outside, right? And I had a former Republican colleague who decided to come with me because she didn't know where this conversation was going to go. But he sparks up his cigarette. We start to engage more. His wife comes out of the supper club and he says, "You can't leave yet." And she's like, "Well, why? I'm ready to go, you know?" And he's like, "Well, I want to introduce you to David. He's the Milwaukee County executive. He's from Milwaukee. He's a Democrat. And I really like this guy," right? And what that showed me was, and it reminds me of Teddy Roosevelt's quote, famous quote, is one of my favorite quotes. "No one cares what you know until they know how much you care." And we have to get comfortable being uncomfortable. And so one thing that I like about going to his particular supper club is that I was able to engage in conversations and engage with people that most folks don't want to do. And I think that the more and more we step outside our comfort zone and just have conversations, we realize that we agree on a lot more than what we disagree on. And that's what I'm excited about when I think about becoming the next governor. This is an opportunity to make sure that, you know, we're bridging the gap, that we're bringing more people to the table, making sure that when the tide rises, all the boats rise. And we can only do that when we're willing to actually have that dialogue. And so, but I've been to many different supper clubs. I know I'll be going to a few supper clubs as we head back to Marinette, the Outagamie and Brown County area. And so just, I'm always looking forward to good meals. So if you know of some good supper clubs, please send them my way.
We've got plenty in Madison.
Mr. Babel up in Door County is underrated.
Mr. Babel, okay.
Sister Babel, it's a bowling alley / supper club. Underrated.
All right, I'm writing that down.
I like the Tornado and Jimmy's Del Bar. Tornado in Madison and Jimmy's Del Bar in the Dells.
I have been to both of those. Both of those spots. Those are good spots.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today, David. We really appreciate it. You're an impressive guy, and we wish you the best of luck in the primary. Go get them.
Well, I just want to say thank you for this opportunity. It's been great to chat with both of you. Looking forward to having more conversations as the campaign trail progresses. So thank you for this opportunity.
Looking forward to drawing more cartoons about you in the future.
Send them my way. I want to see it. I make them my screensaver on my phone.
Our theme music is by Tube Tester.